Recording in Los Gatos, California on January 25th, 2016. This is Geek Speak, episode 4 of our 16th season. You're listening to Independent Public Radio 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz and streaming live worldwide at kosp.org. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP or any of the geeks affiliated organizations. I'm Lyle Troxell, your host and producer of Geek Speak, and with me in the studio is Mr. Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Hello, Miles.
Good day.
What does political junkie really mean?
Means that I look at politics and it's fun. I don't get stressed out because something is happening. I go, how does that fit into everything? Oh, wow, they said something foolish. How would I say that?
I have no idea what it's like to be you.
And this is Mr. Ben Jaffe. He's a software engineer as well, traveler, and a music geek.
Hey, and not a political junkie.
And so you get upset by political news?
Oh, yeah, it frustrates me. It frustrates me. So I just kind of avoid it when I can justify avoiding it to myself. But, you know, sometimes it's important to pay attention to these things.
Absolutely. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about some geek news, of course, as we do. If you'd like to ask us questions or participate in the show prior to the show, during the show, whatever, you're welcome to at any time send us email at geeks@geekspeak.org or, of course, on social media, we're KOSP Geeks. All right. So first story. Well, I'm going to do a story because I think it's so much fun that you work for Facebook now. I'm going to talk to Miles about a Facebook story.
Okay.
And you can't talk about it.
Okay. All right. Of course.
Miles, did you hear that Facebook's Android app now supports Tor built in? Not the website, because of course the website would always support Tor, but you can launch the Android Facebook app and use a private network. The Tor, you want to describe what Tor is to everybody? It's kind of complicated.
Well, a proxy server, just to start there, is you, like for example, what people try to use to look at Netflix movies from different regions. You connect to another computer someplace else, and then that computer makes the connection to the website you want to go to, or whatever service you want to do. And from the point of view of the server, it looks like it's coming from that third party.
So if you were in China, behind the Great Firewall of China, and wanted to access Facebook, for example, you could find some service, like a proxy service, they're sometimes called VPNs or virtual private networks, in the United States. You'd connect through a tunnel of that encrypted form, and then from there you'd be in the US, and then you could access Facebook or anything else.
Yes.
And so what does Tor do? It's kind of like that?
Tor does that, except it's on a larger scale. And it doesn't just make one proxy request. There's actually several. So you're going through multiple points.
Why?
Because, for example, if you as it goes through different countries, for example, one government may be able to subpoena an exit node as it's the last hop before it hits the server.
So when I describe that server that you connect to from China, you connect to, let's say, a machine in Vermont. And in Vermont, that ISP gets contacted by the U.S. government and says, who's been connecting to you? That company would have the IP address of the person in China. So it would be trackable because there's only one hop. You just have to get that intermediary
person. We not only know who connected from China, but also that they were connecting to Facebook.
So Tor instead does multiple of these hops, so it's harder to find?
Right. No one node knows both the source and the destination.
And in fact, the way the protocol works, it's the original name was the Onion Router. That's where it comes from, Tor. And the idea would be these peels of onions or of abstraction, deep and deep and deep, so that as you peel back, you keep on going through the network. And every layer doesn't know about the layer below it, really, because they're all encrypted.
Right.
And so that's generally how the process works. Right. So anyway, Facebook added that to their app directly in Android, which means you can actually log in through Tor. And this allows you to do anonymous connection. And the reason I mentioned like China, it's mostly about governmental suppressed places, right? So where the people are suppressed, you can get around that.
Not always.
Okay.
It can also be people who are at a company and going to Facebook violates their usage of the internet, and the person goes like, I don't care, and you can't block me anyway, and they go and use Tor because they're using IP addresses that aren't flagged as being owned by Facebook.
I got to say, the reason this is important in my mind is that you can, us geeks can always do Tor. Like, I've done it, set it up. Ben, you set up Tor before for your personal use?
I actually have not.
Oh, really? Oh, it's kind of fun. I mean, you can get, you basically download a browser that actually, it's a Netflix or a Firefox version that has Tor kind of built into it. Mm-hmm. And then all your network traffic from that is extremely slow, but completely private, which is cool. Can't necessarily stream stuff in it because the bandwidth really is impaired in some ways. But theoretically, it's quite a bit more anonymous than not doing that. And it's a neat way to do it. And if you really wanted to, if I wanted to achieve that kind of level of privacy, I could install Tor and make it work.
But there are always issues with that. For example, you have to have people volunteering to be Tor nodes.
Yes.
And especially if you are a Tor exit site, which means that last hop before it hits the server you're trying to connect to, you have no idea who is doing the connecting or where, and you don't know necessarily where you're planning on connecting to. So if someone wants to, say, have an anonymous connection to look up child porn, it's always the big boogeyman online, then if you're an exit node on Tor, you may end up having that server, that
be kind of responsible for that traffic.
Yeah, connecting to a whole bunch of child porn sites. And
I mean, there's definitely some concerns about the protocol. But my point is that if you really do, for some reason, need this level of privacy, you have to be really geeky to actually run Tor, unless it's built into the app, like Facebook's doing for Android. It just basically means it's a setting, just turn it on.
Yeah.
And that could be really convenient when you need to have the privacy. Of course, you're then connecting to Facebook, and Facebook knows who you are because you have a login and credentials.
Right.
But you could probably make two credentials and have kind of like a and this would actually be very cool.
And no
for
one
user
on Facebook has a false identity on there.
I think it does happen, though it's against policy. But I could imagine someone wanting to be a journalist and covering topics that are kind of sensitive, make a Facebook account, always connect through it through Tor, and thereby use the service in a kind of journalism form. Anyway, sorry about that.
So
Ben.
Yeah,
Ben of course works for Facebook and can't really talk about issues because of course he doesn't want to represent the company. Just like I can't really talk about Netflix issues.
Right, and actually I have a Netflix story, so I'm going to talk with Miles about it.
Nicely done.
That's
nicely
funny. When I was working for Google, I could talk about it, but I just had to make it very clear I wasn't speaking for Google, and it was only my personal opinion.
Well, right,
and
I think we can do that.
I should also just make clear, like I'm choosing to not speak about Facebook stories just because it is a gray area, and I prefer to be more conservative with those kinds of things.
Right, and I in the past have I definitely talk about Netflix issues that I think is totally appropriate to talk about.
Right.
But I mean, last year at some point there was discussions about Netflix and Comcast making a deal about what is it called?
Are you
the
neutrality?
Interconnects.
Oh,
interconnects, right.
The backhaul.
Yeah, the basically trunk. The way the internet connects, networks connected together. There was a lot of press around it. There was a lot of information. I happen to have personal information. You guys talked about it, or I had private Netflix information. I didn't talk about it, right? Because even though I could participate in the conversation, I'd have to figure out what was appropriate for me to say, and therefore I'm not being my loose, general discussion person.
Right. It changes things when you're talking.
Yeah. So you just have to kind of be conscious of it. So, okay, go. You guys go and talk about it.
Oh, yeah. And this is just a brief story that, so Netflix, and of course, Lyle, you may have more information about this, but Netflix is now... So we were just talking about VPNs and Tor and all that stuff. So if somebody in a company, in a country that, let's say, Netflix doesn't show the movie Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, right? In, country XYZ.
Is that your favorite Star Trek show? Star Trek?
No, actually it's not.
Okay.
Well, I just watched Star Trek.
No, it's not his favorite. It is the best one.
Star Trek Seven Generations gets a lot of flack for being a bad movie. It's a fantastic movie. I watched it last night.
No,
okay.
No,
go watch Star Trek
Seven. Compared to Wrath of Khan. Actually, Star Trek Seven is worse than Six.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Okay, fine, it is. But
successfully derailed the conversation.
Right. Yeah, we have gotten emails from people saying, like, I hate when you talk about Star Trek because you just talk and talk and talk about it. But in any case, let's say I want to watch Star Trek 7, and because of whatever country I'm in, I can't watch it on Netflix because Netflix hasn't made the right deals with the right company, et cetera. So I could use a VPN, or I guess I could use Tor, but realistically I would use a VPN.
Oh, the same kind of thing that Miles was talking about.
You'd find
where Netflix had that title,
right,
and then you'd VPN to that country and you'd look like you were there.
Or use a proxy server in a country where Star Trek 7 is indeed supported with Netflix. And right now Netflix is starting to crack down on that. And of course, it's a little bit of a difficult thing to do, but there are definitely easy ways to use proxy servers to pretend like you're in another country, and more difficult ones. And presumably Netflix is going after the easier ones.
Yeah. It's going to be an uphill battle for Netflix. I mean, VPNs, yeah. There are several providers out there, and the ones that are public like that and are offering services, you know, for money, those are pretty easy to track down and say, yeah, we're going to block them. That's just someone trying to get around our geographic restrictions. But anyone can set up a VPN.
Yeah. So like if, and, let's say we live in different countries and I didn't have access to Star Trek 7, but you did, you could just set up in a box in your closet. You could set up a computer and I could use that as a proxy server.
Or for that matter, we could just have whenever my laptop is open and your laptop is open to set up, run the software on our laptops.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Ready to go. You don't need to even set anything up.
Hey, we could watch Star Trek 7 together.
It does have a sense of privilege though for people who are more well off because they're more likely to have friends who live in other countries.
Right. So I imagine that as Netflix does this, they're going to probably eliminate the majority of this traffic relatively easily, the low-hanging fruit, but there'll always be ways to get around content restrictions like this. Mm-hmm. Specifically when they're geolocated or geo-gated, I guess, if that's a term.
Is there been any news about how many people actually do this with the service?
I don't know.
Okay. One story I thought was very interesting was a guy who was on a naval base. And technically, the naval base is U.S. territory. And so therefore, technically, he should have stuff available to him from his Netflix account as a U.S. citizen because it's going to U.S. territory. And
he could call tech support on that one. That would be a good one for tech support.
But because he was in, I forget which country, you know, some other country, he was getting blocked.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a cool little interesting.
So
if you're traveling?
And he would VPN and he felt completely justified in doing so. And
yeah. What was that?
Well, what if you're traveling? Like, what if you, like Ben, were traveling? Because you travel a lot.
Yeah.
And you just set up a VPN, your personal VPN, at your house.
Yeah, yeah. Similar. Then, I mean, I could definitely do that.
If that was detected by the companies that detect this kind of thing, mm-hmm, and turned off, then when you got home, you wouldn't be able to use it. Right? Like, so there's...
Well, then I'd call tech support.
Right.
Because I pay for Netflix, I can call them, right?
Sure.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder what the legality would be if you are on U.S. property, but using wireless, which is not on U.S. property. Like if the ship is docked in the harbor and you're using the wireless from the hotel just across the way.
Well, so when you're talking about legality, you're talking about copyright and licensing, right?
Right.
So some copyright owner has sold the right to reuse this content in certain regions. And that contract that exists between Netflix and the provider of the content is the thing that designates borders and boundaries. So it probably doesn't have anything affordance for things like, well, what if they're in an embassy, right? Because of course, from a region perspective, that country is the region. It doesn't matter if legality, there's a little sub node that's part of the US. It's actually the region of their territory of that contract. So that's probably why it doesn't matter in that regard.
It's a corner case.
Yeah.
It is not worry about
but
it.
But a lot of this also comes from the desire to release movies, for example, in different countries at different times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then selling DVDs, but you don't want to be able to buy a DVD from Japan for a movie that hasn't come out in the U.S. yet or vice versa. And that's where you get the region codings DVD and then later on for Blu-ray.
And our standing, you know, at Netflix, a standing closure to this whole discussion is we're working really hard to make our global catalog really great. Right. So, I mean, Orange is the New Black is a great example. Since it was one of our titles that we paid for completely, we have global rights on it. Everywhere on the planet, you can watch it, right? Except for the countries we're not legally in or China, because China, we haven't finished that.
Right. But that's something that the internet has changed things. Because, yes, the movie comes out in a different time in the theaters, but they show up on the torrent sites for everyone at the same time.
Yeah. What's torrent sites?
A site that just hosts links to download over distributed.
It's decentralized file sharing, so I can download a file that someone across the world has uploaded, basically.
And that's basically, when you're doing that, you're participating in copyright infringement, right?
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, not by virtue of the torrent, but by
downloading
copyright material.
BitTorrent is a wonderful way, very, very good, efficient way to transfer large amounts of data when a lot of people want a copy of that data.
And we've covered on the show many times, but it is a cool feature. I always wish there was more support for simple torrent clients. Like, for example, podcasting. Wouldn't it be great if podcasting clients actually always supported BitTorrent?
That'd be cool.
Because then the load of all the people that download GeekSpeak wouldn't hit the server that we pay for.
I wanted it that 10 years ago. I remember talking about this, wanting it 10 years ago.
I still
ago,
haven't. I kept on thinking I should put a download of all our, you know, if you want all of our shows, you can download all of them via torrent, because that way it wouldn't hit the load so hard.
What about all the money we make doing this program?
Like, no, that's the thing is, our load the goes bandwidth up, is actually the cost. Like, that's the cost of the show.
That is.
Yeah, our load would go up, but it's something like a logarithmic.
Yeah, no, but also if we all had that torrent file on our home servers, right, and there wouldn't be a big load for us, right? Because every once in a while someone would download, but then enough people would download it that enough people were sharing. It's really kind of... Do we want to get into torrent? I don't think so.
Nah. Yeah. Another time.
All right, did you cover that story enough?
Sure.
Did I talk about it inappropriately enough?
I don't know. That's for you to decide.
So the long and the short of it is Netflix has made an announcement that they're going to stop the ability, or they're going to stop people from
using proxy services.
And so when you say... The general tenor I've seen a lot is it's going to be hard for that for Netflix to achieve that. Why? Like, what is it about? I mean, you kind of talked about your home.
One of the things about a VPN, if I set up OpenVPN on a friend's server when I'm visiting in France or something like that, the connection leaving that machine, I could set that up to look exactly like content going out to from my box, like
if you wanted to be really,
the browser headers would look the same, the timing many times would look the same,
right? And if you want to be really tricky about it, you could also create a separate account that, you know, someone ostensibly is using from France, so that way you couldn't you couldn't look at the person's account and say, oh well, this is an account that usually used to connect in the U.S. or
set an account where the date time stamp is bumped by nine hours or something like that, or 8 hours.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Lost track. What's where next? We were. Well, we do have to take a break in just a few minutes, but let's go ahead and start first talk about some politics, since you are a political junkie, Miles. What's going on in politics? And it better be geeky.
The FCC recently laid down some changes to broadband, basically saying that broadband has to be a download speed of at least 25 megabits a second in order to be considered broadband, as opposed to just general internet access.
Translate that for us. So broadband, when we talk about the term broadband, it's hard. You have to have some definition of what that means. It means faster than dial-up, but it means there's some level. And that's important because what? Because we have some governmental rules about how much broadband should exist, or
there are targets for how much. Yeah, and you hold the carriers to a certain level to say, like, you have to have this much.
You can have this license to take this bandwidth, but then you have to provide this many broadband fulfillment in this area, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so if that definition... The definition is actually really important because it's based around contracts and such.
Yeah. Back in the day, broadband was considered 768 kilobits a second.
Is that slow considered now?
Oh, yes. It would be very hard to watch a Netflix movie, a single one, using all of your bandwidth, not doing anything else. And you'd still be – it would not be – you'd be buffering all the time. It'd be horrible.
Right. You actually wouldn't be, but –
Oh, okay.
Well, because we would downgrade the signal until
you'd
it worked.
You'd have a low-quality experience.
You'd have a lower quality experience, yeah. Okay, so now what is broadband considered, and what's going on with the center?
But as time goes on, you up the volume, because the way people use the internet changes.
Yeah.
For example, it's quite common for there to be three Netflix streams going on in my house at any one time, in addition to me doing some other technical work, maybe downloading something or the like. And at the same time, when you bump up the definition of broadband to say this has to be a minimum of 25 megabits a second, suddenly that becomes very expensive for ISPs.
Sure.
Especially when they're saying, what, Netflix, give you a 5 megabit connection, you're going to be having a really good video.
Right, right.
For example. And so by and large, this was a partisan debate here, because the FCC right now has more Democrats than Republicans, the FCC being appointed by the executive office and the executive branch being controlled by the Democrats. Therefore, there's 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
When and if a Republican takes the presidency, that flips over, as it was during George W. Bush's tenure. It was 3 Republicans, 2 Democrats. And I'm not going to get into the whole only 2 parties get involved. But
what's the motivation for the senators from a political standpoint to increase or decrease what broadband means?
GOP quite often pushes for something that will be business friendly.
Okay. So,
if businesses are saying this is going to be something that's onerous to me, this is an extra regulation as opposed to letting the market sort it out for people saying, I want faster speeds as right. opposed to a dictate. So that goes very well along the party line. At the same time, the U.S. has lagged over time compared to many other parts of the world.
Yeah, we're not first in broadband by any means.
Right. We are getting better.
Yeah.
In terms of the average, we're actually pretty good. In terms of urban centers, but people were when you're making the argument of – but if you look at three Netflix streams at the same time, that's going to be 15 megabits. And so why are you doing 25? Because this is – Netflix is the highest bandwidth thing that most people use, and that's already saturating. I mean that's
right.
all you
Seems
would
fine,
need.
Right? Sure.
Except that limits it to what we're doing today, not what we're doing tomorrow or what is
right.
just mm-hmm. made available today.
In fact, that's exactly the reason why the reason why the network that's being used is kind of less than what people have is because if you built a service that used more than the network they have, no one would use the service, right? So the boundary is always the tech. Like mm-hmm. we can all, like at some point we might be having holodeck type experiences where we need a lot more bandwidth. And of course, higher definition is available and also, what's the high color contrast stuff that's coming? High dynamic HDR. Range video, which also takes more bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that, but there's also things that have nothing to do with video streaming because they were really fixated on video streaming, that being the highest usage. What happens when you have people moving toward as you move in speeds, you have options like, I want to back up my machine to the cloud,
sure. right.
and I don't want it to take all night long to do right. it.
I don't want to have to mail a disk in or anything. Yeah.
Especially after I do an operating system update,
right.
In Mac OS, and suddenly it's a 1 gigabyte.
So you disagree update. With lowering that number? You think that 25 megabits is a good number for what broadband means?
I actually am not going to take a strong stance on this, just because I'm not going to take a strong stance on that.
Because of course, if the mandate gets 25 megabits and that's forced, then there's going to be higher prices for people. And therefore, maybe potentially people in urban centers don't get it.
No, the rural urban centers will usually be okay. It's the rural areas that will suffer most. But I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for filling us in. Hey, you're listening to Geek Speak on Independent Public Radio, KOSP. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me is Mr. Ben Jaffe and Mr. Miles Elam. We'll be right back, and we're talking about a little project that Miles endeavored to do with a screwdriver and some pain. We'll be right back. This is Geek Speak on KOSP. You can join us online at Twitter and Facebook. We're KOSP Geeks. And if you'd like to ask us questions about the show, you can do it there, or you can email us, geeks@geekspeak.org. And of course, all the shows since 2006, I believe, are up at geekspeak.org if you want to really enjoy hours and hours of GeekSpeak content. In any case, we're here now. And Miles, for months, I don't know if I've teased you a lot, but I've definitely thought about teasing you a lot, about the beautiful black line through the center of your screen.
Oh, you've teased me a lot.
of your laptop.
I have not heard of this.
My laptop had a, past tense, had a 1 pixel high off-color line going through my display.
Like right through the middle.
Right through the middle.
That would drive me insane.
It wasn't just black. It wasn't just white. It was always changing depending upon what other colors were on the screen, what it should have been.
Okay.
Wait, why? Like, did you buy it like this?
Because I bought it used and I wanted to save some money. And so at that price point where I was trying to get a machine that would work,
mm-hmm.
A 2012 MacBook Pro, I was like, well, I want some more CPU power because I wanted do something. I want to get some SSDs for it. I want it to be fast I/O.
Yeah.
But I will get a $150 discount if I buy this screen that has a obvious visual defect.
Okay.
Got it. So you had a choice between slightly defective, or
or much more money.
Or spending a lot more.
Right.
This I actually used to have this model of computer too. It has a CD drive in it, right?
Yes. Except that I took the CD drive out and put a second solid state device.
You did?
Yes.
I actually did the same. I did it the same thing with my computer.
Yes.
So two hard drives.
Right. So the place where you normally have an optical drive, you just take that whole thing out and put a drive in it?
Yes.
So you've opened this machine up before?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you guys do that?
because it's really nice to have two hard drives, and nobody uses optical disks anymore, not often at least.
This is actually the reason why I got this laptop, was because it fit with what I was trying to do. If I wanted to go very fast with SSDs, I would have to get a brand new Retina MacBook Pro, which means paying upwards of $2,000.
A lot more money, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I got a 2012 MacBook Pro, I still get USB 3. I still get a pretty fast processor. I still get a reasonable GPU. And I get the ability to upgrade my RAM and the ability to upgrade my storage.
Right. And put a second storage drive in there.
Right.
Okay, cool.
And so and the SSDs with SATA 3, which is also in this, means that I was able to get about a gigabyte per second transfer rates.
What were you working on that needed that kind of transfer rates?
Geographic information systems.
Oh, okay. Lots of data,
Yeah.
And also the promise of doing that is that you could take out your optical drive, put in a hard drive, and then you could put your optical drive in this enclosure. And like a lot of the kits that you would get to connect up the hard drive in the right way inside would also come with an external optical drive.
Is that
enclosure.
What you did, Miles?
I did do that, yes.
Did it work?
Yes.
Cool. And have you done that too with your old drive?
Didn't work with me.
Oh.
No, I plugged it in, everything. I plugged it in and put a CD drive in there, and that CD stayed in there for months because the thing wouldn't...
What does that mean, you don't have a DVD player?
Well, yeah. Then I actually went and bought a more like official external DVD.
So you could watch your Star Trek DVDs.
And that didn't work.
Oh, no.
So I just gave up on optical media entirely because optical media sucks.
All right.
Horrible.
All right. So, okay, so you've got
this
machine.
Yeah.
And the plan has always been to replace the screen, I'm assuming. Because for me, as a photo editor and stuff, I would go crazy with that line.
Right. And I thought when I saw that, I was like, well, I'll just price things out, see how much it costs, what it costs. And whenever I got around to it, whenever I felt like I was worth to justify the price, I would do it.
How long ago did you get this?
About a week ago when I dropped my laptop about 6 inches just the
wrong
way.
Oh, no.
So you tolerated the line for a very, very long time.
Oh, yes. And then I dropped a little bit and I look and there's a whole bunch of pink where there shouldn't be pink.
No. Well, that's nice.
There should have been no pink on my screen, and there was
more pink than
substantial
necessary.
Amounts of pink. And I was thinking at the time, something got messed up just from jiggling it. I'll just restart the machine.
Sure. Yeah.
Restarted the machine, black, nothing.
Not even pink.
Right. And plug it up to an external monitor. It still works.
Oh,
so the computer still worked.
So the machine is fine.
Yeah.
But
and
the
I even
screen.
Looked into hardware info. It didn't see a display anymore.
Oh, it didn't even see the display at all.
It saw the TV that I was connecting to, but not the display.
The TV you were connected to?
Yeah. I connected it up to my parents' 55-inch TV. And I was wondering, like, could I get by with it? No, this isn't going to work.
Not as portable either.
Yeah. It's a nice resolution, but it doesn't work. And so, like, okay, well, I'm going to replace this now.
You plan to do it all the time. Now is the time.
Right. And I looked on YouTube, looked at several videos on how to do it.
Did you come across iFixit?
Yes, I did. They were one of the videos.
iFixit is a fantastic website, iFixit.com. Their tagline is... of course, I should have had this up. Their tagline is the free repair guide for everything written by everyone. So you can almost imagine that they're like the Wikipedia, but of fixing things.
Yeah.
And they're the website that you go to if you're like, okay, I know I want a new hard drive in my MacBook Pro, but I have no idea what kind of MacBook Pro I have. They'll say like, okay, how many USB drives or how many USB ports do you have on the left? How many on the right?
And they'll tell you what machine you have.
And they'll like narrow it down by asking you things that you can easily look up, or you can look it up by serial. It just makes it so easy. And
then they give you like step by steps and videos and the whole deal.
That's
right?
For phones too. That's for all kinds of stuff.
In fact, they even get stuff that has no manual and they open it up, figure out how to do it, and then document that.
Right. So like when Apple releases a new iPhone, they buy one and then they tear it apart very, very carefully. And like figure out.
So the other thing they do is they provide a list of all the tools you need. And the cool thing, the way that they make money, of course, is they also sell all these things. So you can go buy your screens and your replacements and all that. Miles probably researched and got it cheaper, but you can use their stuff without buying anything from them. So it's a great resource if you're going to fix your own computer. iFixit.com. So Miles, the other thing they do on there is give you a list of tools you needed. So what kind of tools do you need? Because I don't see any screws on my screen. And this computer is basically the same as yours. There's no screens.
Right, which gave me no end of anxiety. Absolutely terrified of this because it wasn't just a matter of taking a small Phillips head screwdriver, you know, Joule screwdriver.
Like those are small screwdrivers, but it's doable if you buy the right screwdriver.
Right. If you anyone has played with a Mac laptop, or actually any Mac nowadays, any Apple product.
Size 000 Phillips.
No, if it's a Phillips. On the screen, there are none.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I'm saying that the screws are small.
Yes.
But,
yeah. And so what you have to do is get a heat gun, which I purchased as well.
Wait, a heat gun?
Yes, to soften the glue that holds the glass on top of the LCD down.
This is not recommended, right?
That's what it entails. So if you take it to a service department, that's what they're going to do.
So you had a heat gun?
I bought one, yeah.
I would never have thought to buy a heat gun to replace something in my laptop. Like a laptop, everything is small.
Well,
everything is more delicate.
It's an investment for when I crack my phone screen and I'm going to need
it. You need to do the same thing for phone?
Yeah, it's a heat gun a lot of times.
Ben, you've done this kind of repair, though. I mean, not a screen, obviously, but you've done this kind of complex repair, right? You know how to open things up.
I have not done a screen repair. I mean, like, so if I know how to take off the screen. But you have to go through a whole bunch of things. You enter from the bottom of the computer, you take off the back panel, and you have to take out the hard drive, and you take out this, and you take out that. And then you get to, like, there are always more screws hidden under the devices that are held in by screws that are hidden under devices that are held in by yes. screws. And so it's just this constant never-ending. And the other thing that's really hard is keeping track of what you've taken out in what order.
Yes.
That's so important, because the worst thing that can possibly happen is you put everything back together and you have a screw left over.
All right, let's go on with Miles' story. Let's see if that
happens with the screw.
So long story short, took the heat gun, heat around the edges for about 2 minutes.
Like on the back of it or on the front of it?
On the front of it.
Okay.
Along the edges.
On the glass itself. You're heating it up with a torch. These things are hot. I mean, you can easily burn yourself with a heat gun.
Yeah. And so it was saying keep it an inch away and keep moving.
And by the way, I have a heat gun, so you could have borrowed one from me. Yeah, whatever, you bought one. Okay, go on.
There's shame associated with this. With this story. So, but I mean, a great deal of anxiety.
Good thing you're not telling anybody.
Right. Well, after the fact, you can come to grips with it. But, and so I'm doing this, and I take my putty knife to try to...
Putty knife?
Yeah, because you've got to jam it in between the edge and...
Miles, you're supposed to use a spudger.
Except the spudger is a small, thin, plastic wedgie thing.
Not necessarily. Some of them have two sides, and one is larger.
First off, the first time I was talking about using a spudger on the show, I said a wrong term, and you corrected me. So thank you for giving us the clear term. Spudger?
I learned the word at ifixit.com.
Of course you did.
Of course, yeah. And they also spell spudgers.
The ones that I know of remind me of like a shovel for a Lego guy, right?
Yeah,
like they're little tiny plastic things that are kind of hard.
And in terms of the way you use it, if you imagine if you need to like pry open something that's large and metal, you'll use a crowbar. This is the exact same thing, but for very, very tiny things.
So right.
And
you're not
the
using
glass on the screen is very thin, which is why it's actually somewhat pliable.
So you're not using this spudger. You're using a metal wide thing because you're trying to spread out the force on the glass.
That does have some flex. It's not a rigid blade.
Right.
So I want to be able to jam it and work it a little bit. And so here I am, and I bring up four different videos to see what they're all doing. Three out of four videos didn't use a suction cup. I think I should have used a suction cup. as I come down and...
Of note, I have suction cups as well, two of them.
Okay.
So if anyone needs to use a suction cup in the future, let me know.
Okay, so I heat it up for 2 minutes, and then because I've never done this before, and unlike many other components where you're unplugging things and plugging things back in. You do it enough times, you get comfortable with how much force should be done.
Yeah.
Which is why I have so much sympathy for many of our callers, but they don't have that experience. You don't know if pushing too hard is too hard or if, no, it's expected that you're going to push a little bit and you're not going to cause a problem.
Right.
When I first met you, Miles, you'd finished a career to some degree at Santa Cruz Electronics, which is a computer repair and electronics store in Santa Cruz. Both know the owner really well, of course. He's supported the show in the past, mm-hmm. John Bauer. But there, you actually built computers. Like, that's what you did.
Right.
And you put hard drives together, and you're saying like Legos, right? They're like easy to put together.
And desktops, they're larger and they end up being a lot more robust. Laptops, especially all the newer laptops, that get smaller and thinner. And
I actually have, I just remembered this memory. The first time I had a hard drive. And these are like hard drives. They weigh a couple pounds. They're pretty weighty. They're desktop hard drives, right? Laptop hard drives, very, very small and or much smaller and they lighter. Weigh almost nothing, right? Yeah. But I had a desktop hard drive and I was plugging in the power to the desktop hard drives. And like now we all know we have an intuition of like how hard you want to push to get
those
in a
Moelis connectors can take some oomph.
Right. So I'm like pushing it gingerly and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to break it, you know? And like, of course, you guys are all grinning because you can't break the power.
The Molex is pretty
hard
to break. It's
but
true.
You have to.
You'd need a hammer.
You have to put some oomph behind that Molex.
Yeah, and so now I've replaced a number of hard drives, and I know that when I'm pulling it out, they're very hard to get out, and so I pull it really hard.
You got
to
wiggle.
Yeah, exactly. But if I'm doing that with something inside of a laptop, it's a little bit different.
That kind of force could be dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you do it for the first time, there's kind of a like. Terrifying not knowing moment where you're like, what do I do? And sometimes
there's hesitancy.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Which really is a problem when you have to do this while it's still hot.
Right. You're heating it with
the
hot.
The longer I'm waiting, and I'm realizing this too, the longer I'm waiting, the more that edge is cooling off. But should I go back and reheat it? But how hot is it going to be? Is it going to be a problem and I should start cooking something that it shouldn't be cooking? Am I going to be, like melting some solder point? So I go in there and I try to get it and it's starting to separate. I'm like, yes.
Oh, right on.
I got it going. Yes, yes. Crack.
Oh, no.
And so I have this small inch or 2-inch diagonal crack at the top right-hand corner.
And this is the glass that you're going to keep. The LCD is behind it that you got to replace.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, well, maybe I can salvage it. I'll start from the other side and see what I can salvage. Crack.
No.
And I'm trying above the top and trying to avoid the
little
webcam,
camera, right?
Yeah. Crack. No. Crack. And so I've totally trashed it at this point. I realize it's a lost cause. And suddenly a moment of calm came over me. Because once you break something, you can't break it. Like it's just there. So it's like at that point I'm like, I'm just ripping it off, just making sure I don't cut myself. Yeah, just rip. And I'm realizing as I'm going
through there. Then is what you're saying.
Yes. And as I'm ripping it off, I'm realizing this would have been a lot easier to take off if it all came off in one piece.
Right.
Yeah. So cleaning off all the little glass shards and stuff like that.
Oh, jeez.
I take off the LCD. Gingerly,
are you doing this like you keep on gesturing with your laptop on the like keys below it and the screen in front of it?
No,
there like glass in your keyboard and stuff?
No. The main laptop was taken. I took the display off of the laptop.
So you just operate on the top. You took the hinge apart and stuff. Okay,
But getting that last connector for the on the cable to connect or disconnect it from the LCD and then reconnect it to the new one. There's no slack in it whatsoever.
Right.
It was a nightmare. And I'm finally getting it on. Okay, there we go. And I reconnected to my laptop because I want to try it out.
Wait a second. You broke the glass.
Yes.
You have that screen has glass. So you went and bought glass and had to wait for that?
Yes, I had to wait a couple of days for that.
When you were waiting, did you lose any screws?
No, I didn't.
That's the fear of taking those things apart.
Yes,
there's so many little parts. If you wait 3 days, you won't have the memory of what it was. Would you like make a map for yourself?
Right, and after 2 days, I was like, this is a problem. I don't remember this anymore. I just have to.
So I had that moment once where I was smart about it. I took a piece of paper. I made a little circle of like where all the different screws are supposed to be and everything. And I take it all apart and I'm like, you know what I need? I need a glass of water. And I get up and my foot kicks the piece of paper.
Okay, so
the screws go.
My years of experience. This is what you do. You take a piece of paper. You draw a picture of this panel you're going to take off. Then you circle all the spots where screws would be, and that's where you put the screws. And then you tape them down with Scotch tape.
The tape is important.
And then that thing can stay around for a long time.
You can even put the tape upside, like a little ring of tape, and then put the screws on top of it. It's just something needs to be securing it. So
absolutely.
When your cat comes by.
And the reason I do the map is, of course, some of these screws are shorter and taller than other screws, right?
Yeah.
And they look the same.
Idea.
You're like, oh, wait, this is like two different length screws. And what's going to happen?
Luckily, I've taken the laptop apart, so I did know where a lot of the screws went.
Okay.
Yeah, and iFixit can help you if you don't.
Right, and I watched the video over and over again to see how to do that.
So you buy a new piece of glass. But before that, you actually plug the LCD
actually,
in.
Actually, I waited, and then I put took the old LCD out, put the new LCD in, and screwed it down, reconnected it to my laptop, the rest of the CPU.
With the cable that does that is like a piece of paper. It's so thin.
Yes.
It's like human hairs.
It's yes,
almost, right?
Yes, I was treating it like tissue connector. Paper. I was just being very careful with it.
You can't
and
mess
I hit
up.
And I hit the power button, and the backlight turns on. I see that little
good.
LCD, but nothing else.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, no, is it not the LCD? Is it the cable?
Oh, right.
Is
it, you buy the wrong
is
thing?
Is it the chip set on the main board? or what, you know,
I'm so sorry.
Is it vibration that has like knocked a solder joint on the
motherboard? Yeah, you have no idea, right?
And so at this point, I'm like, I got to pick up my daughter from my parents were watching her. I got to get to Geek Speak.
This was today.
This happened today.
You just plug into a monitor here.
I was just gonna work off of my tablet, but yeah. And then so it's like I'm just gonna put this together. And so I.
Commit. It doesn't work. Just commit.
I put the laptop back together because then I can still use it as an external monitor.
Yep.
And I can, put the display back in. I didn't put the glass back on here.
You put the hinge back together, right?
Yes.
Like really finished.
I put everything on there except for the glass. And on a lark, I'm like, I'm going to try it again.
Of course.
I tried it again. It came up, but it's pink and gray. I'm like, wait, no. And then 3 seconds later, perfect.
Oh, really?
So it meant that I had to reset PRAM and SMC
You changed to a different
resolution screen. Yeah.
Yeah, a different resolution
screen. It's a higher resolution now.
How do you get a higher resolution for your screen? Does Apple make a secondary resolution?
They sold the 2012 MacBook Pros with either 1400 by 900 or a 1650 by 1050.
It was an upgrade.
And you had to pay $100 more, but they told you you pay it now or you can never upgrade it.
But that wasn't true. You could upgrade
it. So then I looked online and looked for the LCD screen and was like, can I get a high resolution one in there? I don't know. And I had some people were saying they could. And then the one particular one I was looking for, someone said, yeah, I had it in the comments. Yeah, I have a 2012 15-inch MacBook Pro unibody, and I had a 14 by 1900, and I bought this, and I plug it in, and it works perfectly.
You should send that person a thank you note.
Yeah, it was the exact comment that I wanted to hear.
So you got a higher resolution. You did it yourself.
Yes.
Okay, how did you put the glass back on?
So then it worked. I'm like, whoa, right.
Right on.
Shut down. Put the glass on. Got the heat gun.
Glue it back on.
To make the glue stick, better.
Congratulations, dude. That's awesome.
And then I look and I see these numbers in the bottom left-hand screen when I turn the computer back on.
Wait, let me see.
And
they're there right now.
Letters and numbers.
Is that the protective screen on the LCD?
That's the plastic serial number that comes on the LCD that I never took off. And now it's under
the
glass.
That's pretty thin, though, dude. That's pretty subtle.
Oh, it's much less noticeable than a horizontal black line or multicolored line.
But that's not even in the – that's not tiny and in the corner. That's like an inch from the left and an inch from the bottom of your screen going horizontally.
Would you rather have that or the black line in the center of it?
I'd rather have the cereal.
Yeah. So are you going to fix it?
Well, that's the thing, though. I'm either going to get sick of it and go like when I'm willing to just order another piece of glass and just be ready for when I break it, even though I do have a suction cup now.
That's good.
I used the suction cup to put the glass back on.
Great.
Or I'll wait for it to pop off because I'm sure after everything that I've done wrong with it, the glue is not going to hold and it will pop off.
You don't understand, Miles.
And then that does, I'm going to take that film off and I'm going to put the glass back on it.
Oh, you'll peel that film off like it's Christmas time. It'll feel so good. But that's the one thing that will work perfectly is that glue.
Right.
But it works now. And
so would you recommend to another person that has broken their screen or something to do it themselves?
That's the thing. It does bring up whole issues of privilege. If you have disposable income, we're literally –
don't do this.
We're literally $20, like whatever. It's $20. Like if it's really an afterthought. And
you mean the glass?
Yeah. If you're making a certain amount of money and you're not spending that much more on your family or you don't have that much debt, or whatever. $20 is like
You mean $20 because you're going to break the glass when you do it?
No, $20 to replace the glass.
Okay.
Because replacing the LCD is a no-brainer.
Because theoretically, if you'd gotten the glass off somehow, if you'd borrowed a suction cup from Lyle over here, then you could have reused it.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
All
right. Well, that is really cool, Miles, that you were able to achieve that. I remember years ago in the beginning of Geek Speak, John Tracy had a machine very similar to that. and when we were all PC people, mm-hmm. and he was one of the early GeekSpeak guys with Miles and I, and his daughter.
The infamous Hinge article.
The daughter ran through the screen and just snapped the hinge right clear. And he wrote an article on fixing it, documented the entire thing, and that became like this really popular article on GeekSpeak.org.
The most popular article, in fact, more popular than just about any of our shows.
Absolutely. I don't have it up anymore because we switched systems for a few times and there were processes. But did you document your process? Or is there so many people that have already done it, you didn't really need to do that?
I wasn't doing anything that the videos weren't doing.
Except for
breaking it. Yeah, except for breaking things.
Well,
okay. And not taking the film off the LCD.
Honestly, you could have used a video of someone breaking it and breaking it and breaking it.
I did take a picture of the broken glass.
Yeah.
That's okay. Cool. All right.
Well, so maybe I'll post that. I don't know.
So if you do something like this, you can be the hero who posts a video of how to do it, or who posts a comment on the Amazon part that says, I have this model and it worked for that model and da da da. You could be the hero.
Yes. But you, if you were strapped for cash,
yeah,
this scares the heck out of you. And it's like, it's that point of no return. Like, what happens if I break it? I don't have the money to repair it. That's
right. Or what happens if you put it together? Really, it doesn't work.
You also need a heat gun and a tools. You need stuff. Yeah.
Oh, what? You can hold a match next to it.
No.
No, don't do that.
Hey, we're going to continue on GeekSpeak, talk about astronomy and smartphones and encryption and Google and all tons of fun stuff. Thanks so much for telling us the story about that, Miles. That was awesome. This is GeekSpeak. We'll be right back. This is GeekSpeak on KUSP. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me is Ben Jaffe. And we're saying goodbye to Miles Elon. Hey, Miles, thanks for the great story about hardware repair.
Always a pleasure.
Ben, what's going on with Microsoft, Google, and Facebook? That's a pretty big story.
Yeah, it's got three big companies in it. And this is actually a pretty quick one, but it's just kind of a summary of what's out there. So it turns out that Microsoft very recently released its machine learning computational network toolkit, which it's CNTK from its own hosting site, and they moved it up onto GitHub. So, and they're also putting it under the MIT open source license, which means that you can use their toolkit for computational network things, machine learning, AI, that kind of stuff. This is very familiar, actually. Baidu recently did the same thing. That's a Chinese web services company. And also, Google did it quite a while ago. So, like, Baidu did it just a little bit earlier this month, in January 2016. And Google released, what was it called? TensorFlow.
TensorFlow?
TensorFlow. They open sourced that back in November.
What do these engines do? Like, what are they?
It's just a whole bunch of different tools that you can use and to create machine learning algorithms and to do AI stuff. I don't know. It's
like the building blocks of building AI.
I'm being a little bit fuzzy about it. Yeah,
that's okay, because fuzzy logic is part of AI.
Right. So Microsoft's toolkit is more specifically deep learning related.
And why are they open sourcing? That seems like a big patentable, knowledgeable thing. It's kind of cool that they're doing that. Do you have any idea why?
I mean, you could ask the same question about any software development that's open source. You know, like most important stuff that doesn't yield a really significant advantage, strategic advantage, companies tend to open source software like that. And I think largely the idea is that other people can both benefit and also build on top of what you've open sourced, and they can also submit code to help improve your project. So all of these companies and individuals, computer scientists from universities, can all work together on these tools. Not just use the tools, but actually work together on the tools.
That's really cool. Yeah. And open source, I mean, there's a lot of good side effects. So I can see why companies do it. But that's cool. That must be really a boon send for your other podcast, right?
Yeah. Linear Digressions. It's a podcast about machine learning and data science.
Yeah.
I love doing it because I get to learn about machine learning and data science. I'm not into that stuff normally, or at least I don't know much about it.
Right.
But my co-host, Katie Malone, she knows a lot about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so my job is just to ask her questions, intelligent questions.
That's kind of like my job here. I ask you intelligent questions. That's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah. And actually, along with previous things that I've done, I used to be, now I'm at Facebook, I used to be with this company called Udacity, which mm-hmm. does online learning. And they recently, together with Google, released a class on deep learning. So if you want to
Oh, cool. So a Udacity course.
Yeah, Udacity course with Google, built by Google and Udacity folks, and it's free. So you can go online and you know, they have Nano Degrees, which are their paid product, but all of the courses in those are totally free. So you can go and take this deep learning course for free.
At Udacity.
And actually, there's a little button on that website that says start free course. And
you put that button on.
That's awesome. I typed those characters in the code base.
You can see some of the work that Ben has done. Now,
one button.
So the one button at Udacity versus what you're doing now, different scale, I would assume.
Well, I did a lot of other things at Udacity, sure. But they weren't...
But not a lot of public stuff. Right?
Well, actually, I did a number of public-facing things, but not integrated within the Udacity website, right? Mm-hmm. So like the website that you go to or the classroom that you go to, I didn't really work on that very much, but I did work on a couple external things. So
yeah.
Yeah, and some internal tools. I also made a course at Udacity.
About what?
A couple of them. JavaScript design patterns. So if you want to learn JavaScript, you can take the JavaScript courses, and mine is the premise of my course that I did at Udacity is, so now you know what a for loop is, now you know what a variable is, now you know what a function is, you can write all these things, now you can create a huge mess, right?
You sure can.
Here's how you organize your code. Okay. Here's how you kind of like create these components. And
software engineering, that's called design patterns, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I got for Google, Facebook, yada, yada.
I want to tell you a little story about Krebs Security. It's actually Brian Krebs who founded Krebs on Security. It's a blog post. And the thing about Brian Krebs is he's very knowledgeable about all things security.
Right.
And so like one of our roles in GeekSpeak is we research about stories that have hit the news, and then we go and make sure that we have good information. You use The Bad Astronomer for astronomy news. Yep. I use Krebs on Security for security news. Right. Right. Like we all have these experts in the field we pay attention to, and Brian Krebs is one of them. And he has had this kind of long relationship with a hacker who's been gone by Flycracker and Centrion and Dark Life and such. And what this hacker decided to do was to attack Brian Krebs. And what he did is
that's a bad idea. You're a hacker, you don't want to attack a security researcher.
Well, that's the thing is that there is a lot of back and forth. Security researchers are active members of the community, along with these people that are doing illegal things. There's very interesting lines of where, like, they go to the same seminars, right? I mean, everyone in that field is very interested in the same topic matter, security. One side is trying to break it, and the other side is trying to seal it up, and it's almost like superheroes and supervillains in that regard, right?
Wow, yeah.
Because
except superheroes and supervillains don't go to the
conferences
one
together?
Super conference.
They
together,
might.
Right?
You don't know. Like Capes Incorporated might have a seminar or something. You know?
Super, super at the Moscone Center in San Francisco, right?
So what happened was this hacker, this I don't like using the term hacker because I think of the term hacker as a good thing.
That's a positive. Yeah,
so
I like that term.
Cracker? I don't know.
No, that's a black hat hacker.
Black hat hacker.
Yeah,
someone doing bad.
This idea of white hat, black hat, and gray hat. White hat is a hacker who is trying to hack into systems in order to expose the security vulnerabilities to the companies who can fix them.
Right.
A black hat hacker might be doing it for a malicious reason or his own or her own personal.
So
good.
This criminal.
Right. Criminal.
I'll go with criminal because what this guy did was he went ahead and said, hey, anybody that wants to attack Krebs with me, go ahead and donate to my Bitcoin wallet. And once I get $200... worth of money in the Bitcoin wallet, he then, on the Silk Road, which is like an underground illegal purchasing, bought heroin and had it shipped to Krebs's house. And then the plan was to have it shipped to his house and then call the police and have a raid on Brian Krebs, and Brian Krebs would have heroin in his house. Very devious.
Whoa.
Brian Krebs found out about this beforehand, called the FBI and said, this is happening right now. And the FBI helped him out. So it wasn't a big deal.
Wait,
he did not get in trouble for it.
He foiled the plan before the package got to
his
house.
He did. Good security guy. In any case, this just shows the vulnerability issues and kind of that's what I mean by like superheroes and supervillains, right? Like he had to foil the plan of the villain. Really amazing little story. Anyway, if you want to know more about that story, of course you can get to it up at geekspeak.org where we post all the good things.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned Bad Astronomy.
Yeah,
and
I did.
Actually, I was just looking at the blog. Bad Astronomy, run by Phil Plait. Fantastic blog. He is not a bad astronomer. He is a good astronomer. And he writes about fantastic things, skepticism, and also science and astronomy. And I just wanted to briefly cover two stories and then, you know, hopefully drive a little traffic over there if you want to learn more about them. Right now, in late January, early February, you can see five planets in the sky at the same time.
From the western, I mean, from the northern hemisphere?
From almost anywhere.
Cool.
With a naked eye.
Whoa. That's five?
Five.
Okay, so we're not talking about
like Uranus or Neptune.
No, no, no.
We're not talking about far away
stuff. Mars and Venus.
Actually, do you want to guess what they are?
Well, I'm gonna say Mercury, but it would be very hard to get it right at the right time. And then Venus.
Mercury is one of them.
Yeah, and then
Venus is one of them.
Then Mars.
Mars.
And I'm gonna go with Jupiter and Saturn.
Jupiter and Saturn. Yeah, those are the first five closest planets to us.
It's not that hard to pick. Oh, and then Earth. I can see Earth almost all the time.
Yeah, actually, he does mention that at the end. He said, and I would be remiss to not mention the planet that we can always see all the time with the naked eye, our own planet that we're standing on.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So of course, Mercury and Venus, you're going to have to see at almost twilight, right? Right at that point where the sun is down, but especially Mercury. It's almost always very close to the sun.
Yeah, you would have to see them either almost at twilight. I guess, is twilight on both sides?
I think twilight is on both
sides. Twilight when the sun is setting, twilight when
the sun
is rising.
You basically want to have the sun just over the horizon, either direction.
Right.
And then I don't know if it's the sunset or the sunrise right now, you see Venus, but obviously it's one of those. And
but in any case, you can get information about where to, like when to look. It's very, very early morning. So if you wake up early like me, I mean, I wake up at 5:36 a.m. I could see all the planets.
So that's one story, if I'm bad at remembering. What's the other one?
The other story is just a quick check on where we are with this whole global climate change thing.
This is going to be a depressing one.
I know, I'm sorry. Okay. So analysis does show that 2015 was the by far warmest year on month. Like, by far.
The warmest year.
The warmest year globally, despite the whole like storm.
And all so that 2015 stuff. Is the hottest so far in recorded history.
Second hottest, 14? 2014. Yeah. So
not good.
That's what I got to say about that.
This is GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and used with permission. And GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, which means you can use our stuff any way you'd like. You can even make money on it. Just let them know. The Geek said hi. I'm Lyle Troxell, and this is KOSP, Public Radio 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz, and streaming live worldwide at KOSP.org. To find out more about this show or any episode of GeekSpeak, go to GeekSpeak.org. You can email us, geeks@geekspeak.org. Earlier in the show was Miles Elam. Right now is Ben Jaffe. Ben, thanks for joining me.
That was a lot of text you just went through. Thank you.
And to our intern, Chandler, thank you so much. And also to our Canadian correspondent, Greg Merkley, thank you. And to Michael Newman of Pet Star Music for a wonderful theme song. And thank you for being here for the fourth episode of our 16th season of Geek Speak. See you next week. Let's do one more story, hopefully less depressing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's see if I've got one. You talk about smartphone encryption?
No, let's talk about the card game.
Oh, well, okay.
Sure, yeah. So Winston Churchill's lost card game.
This is the thing that Donald Rumsfeld,
of all people,
so crazy, puts an app on the App Store, which is a solitaire game.
Similar to solitaire.
Yeah. Well, it is a solitaire game. It's designed to play by one person, so it's a solitaire.
Yeah.
But Rumsfeld, the first time I heard of this, I imagined that he like took some time to learn iOS and started developing something, not the case.
Here's the interesting thing. He actually wrote a Medium article. Medium.com/@DonRumsfeld/blah blah blah.
Wow, weird.
It says at 83, I decided to develop an app. And then you read down a little bit further and it says, blah blah blah. That's one of the reasons I've spent the better part of the past 2 years trying my hand at developing a mobile app.
He really started trying to develop.
To be more precise, I've been working with a team of developers to blah, 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 blah. No. He didn't develop a mobile app. He hired some developers to develop a mobile app.
But what does this have to do with Winston Churchill?
It was Winston Churchill's game.
Oh, so Winston Churchill
back in the day
invented a solitaire game?
Yeah.
And that's this game.
Yeah.
Hmm. So you had a friend that actually bought it and played it and tried it. Is it any good?
I actually do have a friend. And hold on, let me just find the exact quote here. Okay, he says, my friend Ezekiel says, bought and tried game is buggy and poorly designed. He should have signed off on a little less UX. But the game itself, the kind of solitaire, is in fact quite hard and fun. Oh, cool. So, point for Winston Churchill. Half a point for Don Rumsfeld.
He didn't execute something perfectly? I thought everything he tried, he did a really good job on.
I don't know.